Let me introduce the moderator of today's program. The moderator of today's program is Marta Keen, and she is the CEO of the of JAVA. She came to JAVA as the COO in fall of 2012. She's made a career of collaboration to focus internal collaboration within organizations and external, and the alliance that you're going to hear about today is a perfect example of that. She's been providing the continuum of care for continued living. Marta has lived in Charlottesville for the past 13 years, returning after 20 years in Northern Virginia, and we're glad you came back. Thank you, Marta. During her previous 27 years, she worked in executive positions overseeing rehab programs for the National Skilled Nursing Facilities, assisted living companies, and her entire career has been helping seniors achieve the highest quality of life, and she's now living in the place of her choice, and she's hoping that seniors will also be able to live in the place of their choice, and that's what today's program will partially focus on. She believes in creating a community that honors and respects the gifts that seniors have to offer. Without further ado, Marta, if you'll take over and introduce the other panelists. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. We're really happy to be here today, and we look forward to having all of you hear a little bit more about the Charlottesville Area Alliance. I will be introducing each speaker right before they come up, but I wanted to give you just a minute of background so that you understand a little bit about what we are about and why we should care about this. You've been reading a lot as new census data comes out. By 2030, 22% of the population in this area will be 65 or over. That's very significant and something that all of our communities need to take into account as they plan for the future. And so that's really what made us come together. And just in the brief time since we sent this information to Rich, we're already up to 25 agencies that are a part of this group. So it continues to grow. It's the vision and the mission are pretty interrelated. It's that we really want this area to be the most age-friendly community in the country, because you know this area likes being the premier of anything in the country, so we wanted to keep right along with that. And we see our mission as being the ones that will help lead it there and be a voice to advocate. Age-friendly is really good for everyone. I really like the quote from Matt Thornhill that winning communities in the future will be the ones that invest in creating great places to live, work, learn, and play at every age. And I think that's why we like the idea of talking about age-friendly, because we know that it's not that we want to segregate by age groups or any other group. It's recognizing that we all want and will benefit from aging together, and we all are aging. Even little kids are aging. We have eight life elements that we are looking at because we chose to use the World Health Organization model with AARP as the network in the United States. And so as we try and organize our thoughts and our work, it's around these eight areas. They're all interrelated. It's sort of hard to designate something as a separate idea. And so today what we did was we chose three that are particularly interrelated. I think as they were talking beforehand, they felt like they all three were going to be referring back to one another. So transportation, affordable housing, and healthcare really do intermingle and depend on one another and are a strong foundation. And then Peter's going to speak to the idea of civic engagement, which I think is a strong example of what Senior Statesmen of Virginia brings to us, and also the way in which we add purpose to our life. So of the eight, we wanted to not overwhelm you, so we're going to hear from ideas about four of them. As I mentioned, it's World Health Organization. We felt that that foundation was a good way for us to organize ourselves, and we're really thrilled to say that Albemarle County, Fluvanna County, and the City of Charlottesville have all accepted and registered with the charter for the AARP. So there's about 208 towns or counties across the United States, and three of them now are in our area. So without further ado, I would like to bring Brad Sheffield up. Brad is the executive director at Jaunt, and he's been working in the transit industry for 16 years in both public and private transit planning roles. From January 14 to December 17, Brad served on the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, representing the Rio Magisterial District. He's passionate about helping communities foster the traditional characteristics that make places great to work, raise a family, and retire. So please join me in welcoming Brad.
Well, thank you all for having me and let me speak. In those years of serving in office, I got to know a lot more about the issues from that elected official perspective, which I think really did help me grow more professionally. So without a doubt, as I tackle my day job, I become more appreciative of that experience. For me, transportation focuses a lot on just maps. So that's really all I'm really showing today, some information map-wise, because at Jaunt, we really look at our challenges from such a regional standpoint, and we look at them very differently from an urban standpoint and a rural standpoint. In the urban area, someone can be just as isolated as someone that's divided by a two-lane road versus someone in a rural area that's divided by 100 acres. So without a doubt, that isolation still exists. And then even after they access some sort of form of transportation, the isolation can still exist. You know, if you get on a bus, if you're walking down a sidewalk, whatever it may be. So isolation is, you know, really about bridging that human contact, which I think I feel fortunate to be the director of Jaunt, because I work with some really great people that really embrace that core aspect of looking out for the people we serve, not just the service we put out. And so that makes our challenge even harder, because we care a lot about who we're serving, and we try to figure out how we can best serve them while still balancing all the other expectations that we have. So, you know, with this map, this is just the information we have, and that's part of the issues that we try to overcome, is getting better information. And that's where the Alliance comes in, to really help Jaunt understand what other information is available, and then in the reverse, to be able to share our information with them. So this is all the data I have on people that I know is 60 plus older. I could tell you that is not everybody we serve that is 60 plus older. But if I don't know, it's hard for me to figure out how to arrange my resources. So, you know, really the recipe for the challenge that we're facing right now is we do have a lack of knowledge and a lack of knowledge on where the needs are, a lack of being able to get the right information out to people who need us. And I think we're faced with some of our challenges with our limited resources. So we've got that to kind of balance with, you know, get a little bit closer in there to Charlottesville. You can see I kind of got away from trying to just look at Charlottesville because it got so dense with dots. Trying to balance that with how do we change that recipe to something to where we're getting out the right information to people, the decision makers, getting them to understand this, getting them to understand the impacts. And what's really interesting is getting them to understand the successes that exist. I just recently went through a couple of weeks of going back and forth with the General Assembly on an issue related to capital funding for transit. And I went into that with trying to get them to understand how if the state reduces the amount of money they provide to Jaunt to help replace its vehicles and things like that, it's going to put a financial burden on the localities. I can tell you, the General Assembly, while they understand the limitations of a locality and the financial restrictions that they have, it's not the top of their concern list. So near the end, as I started talking about, and Marta and I present, it wasn't me and you, it was Lisa Guthrie from VTA. I thought about Marta. It was to the Aging Association. And at that point, it kind of tipped where it wasn't about the loss of funding to the localities. It was going to be the loss of service to the people. And a lot of the delegates actually started to want to know more. But at that point, it's a little bit later in the game. But it's very interesting how we communicate with the elected officials about some of this stuff. They are worried about the people in their communities. Sometimes we get too much into the information that they don't understand it. They don't know how to translate it. So for me, really trying to focus on how to best tell the stories about what Jaunt does, how we connect with all the other services that exist, and celebrating those successes and showing them, you know, how much more we can do. We're very fortunate in this area. And I'll just wrap up with the fact that I love the thought that no one really likes to talk about the problems, and really people avoid really trying to figure out the solutions because it's just difficult. But everybody likes to be part of success. Everybody wants to be part of the party. And that's kind of where I want to take things, at least with Jaunt, is to try to get back to the elected officials understanding how successful we are. We have a lot more to do, but we can be even more successful, and they all will want to be part of that. So as a community, I think we're looking outward to say, hey, how can you help us highlight this so that we can show that we can do more? So I'll wrap up with that, pass it on.
Thank you, Brad. Okay. So next we have Sunshine Mathon, who's the Executive Director of Piedmont Housing Alliance. Sunshine has led the development of over 1,200 healthy, efficient homes in Texas and Virginia, including some of the highest ever LEED for Homes communities. He's a nationally recognized leader in the deep green affordable housing sector. Sunshine holds a master's in architecture from the University of Texas. So welcome, Sunshine.
Good afternoon, everyone. So for those of you who don't know Piedmont Housing Alliance, it's a 30-plus-year-old nonprofit here in the region, mostly focused in Charlottesville, but serving all the surrounding counties as well, doing a combination of affordable housing development, support for first-time home buyers and low-income home buyers in general through a variety of counseling services and grants that we can pass through, and then we do property management for affordable housing as well. As Marta mentioned, the last 14 years I've lived in Austin, Texas, where I did most of my work, and recently moved up here about 6 months ago and excited to be here. But the conditions, even though there's actually a lot of similarity because the challenges of a boom economy and a desire for people to move into a locality like Charlottesville, like Austin, the scale is different, but there's actually a lot of similarity. I wanted to just highlight a few stats, and this is going to be a very broad overview. I mean, 10 minutes isn't a whole lot of time to get into details, and as others have mentioned, it's an incredibly nuanced set of variables that deal with health, housing, transportation, and all of that. But you can see in the upper piece there that home ownership, and these numbers are from Virginia. This is Virginia wide. So home ownership rates continue to decline in this state, and that is reflective, honestly, of the nationwide trend as well. We are more and more becoming a nation of renters. The cost of owning a home certainly works for many people, but for a lot of folks, doesn't really financially work. And particularly in the cities where you see lots and lots of urbanization, home ownership in single-family home context is just it's a limited commodity. And the only way, as more people move into a region, and particularly in Charlottesville, where you have a limited growth boundary by the city edge, the only way to add more housing is to go up, effectively. And that implies, generally speaking, rental. Not always. It can be a condo regime, but generally rental. You'll also notice that in the lower portion, the lower graph there, most lower-income Virginians struggle to pay for their own homes, and that's whether rental or market rate. So the graph there shows the burden of housing, the burden of cost of housing for renters and for homeowners. And in general, the metric of what's considered affordable is when you're paying no more than 30% of your annual income towards your housing costs. And so if you're making $100,000 a year, that means you're paying no more than $30,000 a year towards your housing costs. But if you're making $10,000 a year, then you'd be paying no more than $3,000 a year to housing costs. That's the point at which, theoretically, you're not considered housing cost burdened. We are approaching in the state of Virginia where one-third, I believe, of people are actually cost burdened in their housing costs. The need for affordable senior housing is urgent and growing, and this, again, this is Virginia-wide, but I think it's pretty reflective of here in Charlottesville, in the Charlottesville region as well, and the surrounding counties. Then, if you look at half of the seniors are renters, half the seniors are renters in general throughout the state. To some extent, what that means, what that implies, is you need a variety of strategies to support seniors in both sides of it. You need strategies to support seniors to stay in their homes and maintain home ownership, and maybe even grow some home ownership, but you most certainly need support on the rental side as well. Multifamily, as I mentioned, kind of the rental side of it is meeting more and more of Virginia's housing needs. And that trend, I can promise you, in an economy like this, will only continue to grow. That is the future to some extent. So this is year 2000, I don't actually have the label on there, but this essentially shows the number of seniors in this by census tract in this region. And there's a similar slide a little while ago, but this is 2014. And you can see the change, over the last three years ago, but it's still that arc of more and more seniors coming to the region is just growing. More coming to the region, but also just aging in place to some extent. And this is looking at the percentage of folks who are cost burdened in their housing. So again, that means that they're paying more than 30% of their income towards their housing costs. Again, this is the year 2000. And this is 2014. And so in those dark blue regions, for those of you who can't see in the back, that's 40% or more of the people in those regions are housing cost burdened. And that trend will continue as we see time grow, and particularly in a continuing boom economy. The challenges that we see, and this is from the Virginia Housing Policy Advisory Council report that came out in December or November last year. The governor had called together this council to look at how do we approach comprehensive reform or comprehensive statewide strategies that help us address the affordable housing crisis, essentially, that's happening in the state, but certainly here in the region as well. So the key challenges that they identified in that report, all regions of the state, no matter where you are experiencing significant shortages of affordable housing. That was true before the housing crisis that happened, a few years ago, but it got dramatically accelerated during that period of time. As I mentioned before, one-third of Virginia households are housing cost burdened, and about half that number are severely housing cost burdened, which means that they're paying more than 50% of their household income towards housing costs. Regions in general that have really robust housing and transportation strategies and interlink those two are generally better off economically. And that means both in terms of the households who live there, but also in terms of the businesses. Federal government support is not a long-term solution. Regardless of the current administration, the trend in general over the last couple of decades is that federal support for housing and other programs has continued to slowly decline. And one of the challenges that we as a state face is how to figure out how we're going to solve our affordable housing crisis, not completely depending upon the federal government. We still need that federal support that exists now, but we will have to be creative about how we address it in the long term. And then unaffordable and unstable housing negatively affects residents' health and well-being. And it's common sense, but there's lots and lots of data out there that supports that. And Rebecca, I think, will talk a little bit more about that. Way forward. I guess I would say that the Advisory Council report was the number of problems that identified was long. The number of solutions that identified was relatively short, and I can honestly say that is true everywhere. It is a challenge, no matter where you go in the country, whether you're in a place like Austin or Seattle or New York, or you're in more rural conditions. The cost of housing is becoming more and more of a problem. In any case, the ways forward that they identified are proactive and decisive planning and policy, meaning let's not just keep talking about it, but let's actually do some stuff. transportation planning and location efficient development is really critical, and particularly for folks who are either on the very low income spectrum where they may not have a vehicle, or for folks maybe in the senior side who actually are starting to not use vehicles. How you think about transportation planning and location efficient development is really critical. And then joint planning between Charlottesville and the surrounding counties. This is not a direct pull from the housing policy, but I extrapolated from some comments. But that is a critical piece. The report does see that Charlottesville region to be the second highest job growth area in the state outside of Northern Virginia, as a percentage, not say in terms of raw numbers of jobs, but as a percentage based on what we have now, which what that means is increased housing pressure, because that means more people are coming. I wanted to say also that, based on some of the comments that came up initially, you know, we have in this country our development patterns, the way we do housing, we have a history of segregation. And that honestly, I think that one of the ways forward is how we approach this from an integration perspective. And I mean that in terms of income, and I mean that in terms of race, and I mean that in terms of age. And I mean that in terms of place, so housing and services and retail and commercial, how we plan those things together, that will ideally create more thriving communities. Another piece of this, and this is Charlottesville specifically, it doesn't necessarily address the broader counties, but I do think that there is opportunity there too. But this Charlottesville City Council and city staff and all the advocates and residents out there we've been working really hard around thinking through where we're headed with the affordable housing strategy in Charlottesville. And in particular, the city has commissioned a housing needs assessment that we should have that data back in the next month or so that will start to codify those numbers so we understand what the scale of the problem is, with the goal of using that to develop over the next year an affordable housing strategy that we can use to, you identify the problem, you set your goals, and then you figure out your strategies to achieve those goals. And that process will be unveiling over the next year. And I would say at this point, any opportunity you feel like you have to come to the various public meetings that will be happening to have a say and play a role in that, I would highly encourage it. And I'm almost done. So I'm just going to make a last plug, actually. So this is a new program that Piedmont Housing has been administering. I have some flyers up here as well. So there are two programs where it's basically free money for accessibility modification. So one program is for anyone in our region 10, but you have to be at 80% AMI or less. And what that means is for a family of four, that means probably about $60,000 a year or less you would qualify. You can come to us with more to ask those questions if you have interest. But essentially, it provides grant money for up to $4,000 to build ramps, widen doors, lower cabinets, put in grab bars, any number of things that help people stay in place and maintain their housing. And then the second program is similar, but it's specifically targeted for folks who have had a service-connected disability, military service, and there is no income limit there. But again, there's a $4,000 grant available. And these are both recently came available, so if you know folks, spread the word. I have flyers up here, but you can always come to us and we can follow up with questions. Thank you.
Okay, so our next speaker is Rebecca Schmidt, and she's the Population Health Manager for the Thomas Jefferson Health District, serving the city of Charlottesville and the five surrounding counties. Over the past 15 years, she's worked in health policy, program development, implementation, and evaluation for non-governmental agencies and for the local, state, federal, and international government. She holds a BA from Boston University and an MPA in public administration from the London School of Economics and Political Science. Rebecca.
Good afternoon. So I'm going to talk about community health and aging, and my thunder has kind of been stolen here because I'm approaching health through a lens that's very similar to what we've already discussed. But I did want to start with a common understanding about what health is. So if you read this definition, you'll see that health, it's not a passive definition. It's really active. It's not just the absence of disease or disability. It's really an engagement. Mental health is a big part of it, and social well-being. And you'll see that reflected in the different areas that Marta introduced earlier on. But another concept that should have been with us all along, but is growing in discussions around the country, is health equity. And that is that everyone has the opportunity to attain their highest level of health. At a very basic level, what that means is that you don't give an adult bike to a five-year-old child, right? You give people the tools that they need that are appropriate for their needs. As you can see in the graphic here, some people might need a couple more boxes to stand on to reach a tree, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be able to reach the tree. But regardless of how we look at health, whether we look at it from age or income or race or education, and we look at it through all of those lenses, we want the same result ultimately, and that is increased life expectancy and quality of life, but also that we have a real focus and intentional planning around the inequities that are in our society. And a good example of that is that place really matters to health. And I know Sunshine just briefly touched on this, but when we look about what causes healthy people, 40% of it is related to transportation, education, what we call the social determinants of health. Another 30% is related to our health behaviors. And those are driven by a lot of different things. They might be driven by who's in your family, what you learned growing up, what your education is. And then finally, a 10% is related to our environmental factors. So we can think of safe streets. We can think of lighting. We can think of whether your neighborhood is filled with farmers markets or whether it's filled with convenience stores. You can look at it in a lot of different ways, but the point is that only about 20% is actually related to health care, the health care we receive. So, and that's the conventional understanding of health, right? You probably thought I'd be up here maybe as a physician or a nurse talking about health, but really when we look at health from a public health standpoint, that's what we look at. So we have to assess, we have to conduct assessments, and we've mentioned several of them today, transportation and housing, to really understand how and why place matters. So this is one example. It's a map of Charlottesville, and the dark areas there are places where more than 20% of the population has been in poverty for 30 years or more. So it's really important that we have good tools to tell stories. And those tools are related to data in different ways. So data that we have from the Census Bureau, data that we collect from community surveys and storytelling. And then the way we tell those stories is critically important. Maps are really powerful, and you've seen a lot of those today. But this is an example of an assessment that we use in partnership with the University of Virginia Health System, Sentara Martha Jefferson, and the University of Virginia Masters in Public Health Program. Those are kind of our core partners. And then you can see several of our other partners up here. We conduct this assessment every few years for federally qualified health centers, which in our area is Central Virginia Health Systems, and then for Sentara Martha Jefferson, they're required to do this type of assessment every 3 years. So that's about our time frame on it. And our most recent report was published in December of 2016, so we're in the implementation phase. Honestly, the assessment phase can sometimes be easier than the implementation. Because in the assessment, you can pull together your data, you can produce a lovely report, you know, we've identified the problems. And then the next steps are the solutions. So the framework that we have for the solutions, you can see here, and it's four fairly broad areas: promote healthy eating and active living, and addressing mental health and substance use. Those have really been a part of our conversations since the first assessment in 2009. reducing health disparities, that was a big focus in 2012, and that was focused on infant mortality between black and white babies and improving equity in that area. And then finally, that fourth one, foster a healthy and connected community, that's really about health across the lifespan. And, health across the lifespan. And that's in growing recognition of the fact that really it is important to look at health, you know, from a family perspective or young children, and then to recognize that healthy aging component, which is a part of our discussions today and nationally. And we do these assessments. Most recently, we had more than 105 partner agencies, and we would love the Senior Statesman to be another partner agency in that process. It's great to get information from lots of different groups within our community to drive that forward. So again, there's a growing awareness nationally of the importance of looking at health, specifically around healthy aging, and then growing locally. This is a different way to look at the statistics other panelists have shared, but if you look at the percentage growth, the biggest percentage growth has really been in our over 55 population, so even broken down by age. So finally, regardless of how you look at health, the great thing is that the answer is the same. We need livable communities that are good for people and business. And this is pulled directly from the AARP website, talking about that age-friendly network. But really, if you look at this, there's nothing that you disagree with for any age, right? These are the things that we need in place for any type of healthy community. So thank you.
And then finally, but not least, Peter Thompson served as the executive director of the Senior Center since 1999. The Senior Center positively impacts the community by creating opportunities for healthy aging through over 100 programs and scores of partnerships. Peter received his bachelor's from UVA and his MPA from Virginia Commonwealth University. Recent community service includes serving on the board of directors for OLLI at UVA, the Chamber of Commerce, and the Center for Nonprofit Excellence. Peter.
Thank you all. Is everybody having a great 58th birthday? With the Senior Center today, right? Don't expect that every Wednesday you come in for Senior Statesman, but it is our 58th birthday today, and we're glad y'all are celebrating with that today, yeah. How many folks saw today's Daily Progress top fold front left story about Albemarle County demographics? Right. You know, that's just it's timely. It's not surprising. You've seen it all reinforced here today, but we really feel that our area is reached a tipping point, and is starting to really pass the tipping point of our community understanding aging as a primary issue, that it's not just something to think of when you turn 62 or 65 or 85 or whatever numbers people often talk about. But we really feel that the media is paying attention to it, the fact that the city and county in Fluvanna, and we're expecting the outlying communities to join CAA soon as well, and everybody we've talked to getting involved in this alliance has jumped on board really very rapidly. In fact, I spoke to a Rotary group about a month ago. I had four people come up to me saying, how come we haven't been invited to join yet? We want to be playing part of this. So we've moved well past the usual suspects of JABA and the Senior Center and Jaunt and others, and are now been able to move to the Piedmont Housing Alliance, Region 10, the Charlottesville Area Association of Realtors and others that you may not necessarily think of as aging services organizations, but are understanding that the aging of our community is impacting what they do, and what they do is impacting how age-friendly our community is. Where do I go?
Jim, I think we need the blue.
Oh, there we go. I got it. Thank you. You know, it does feel a little interesting to come up and talk in front of the senior statesmen of Virginia that are so much about lifelong learning and civic participation to talk about civic participation when you already are doing it. But it is in a critical part of the Charlottesville Area Alliance and the World Health Organization and AARP metrics that you are learning about more today. And because part of why CAA is here today, in addition to just raising awareness and engaging the community about the age-friendly concept, is how the senior statesman of Virginia may play a role in that. And so, you know, the civic engagement piece is an important element of that component. So let me backtrack real quickly. So civic participation and employment is one of the eight dimensions. I'm going to focus on the civic participation part, but I don't want to lose track of the fact that a lot of the ideas that I'll talk about are also relevant to paid employment. You know, it's, whether it's paid or volunteer work, continuing to have purpose in life is core to us as American citizens and part of what makes our country great. And so employment's certainly a key part of that, but we're going to focus on the civic participation part. So what is civic engagement? Working together to make change or difference in the community. Anybody here do that on every once in a while? I know most of the people in this room. I know that's what you live and breathe. And that's part of what makes Charlottesville, Albemarle, and the greater community such a vibrant place, is we do have a very opinionated, active, engaged community, and that's largely to the good. So certainly it's activities building the collective resources, skills, expertise, and knowledge of citizens. We do better as a collective voice, whether it be within your family, your neighborhood, your civic organization, your faith organization, the city of Charlottesville, or, you know, the entire Thomas Jefferson Planning District. We do better by hearing from multiple voices. People come with different perspectives. We have people who have lived in other parts of the country. We have people who have lived here and their roots go back to Peter Jefferson's time. All of that different diversity of skills, experience, perspectives are critical to be able to make a better community. Certainly a big part of it is a political dimension. You know, voting, writing letters to the editor, reading our daily newspaper and listening to local media, writing our elected officials, meeting our elected officials, coming to candidate forums every election cycle, which of course is every year in Virginia, right here in this very room, that we are very happy to sponsor with Senior Statesmen of Virginia. You know, all those different things, and those bless you for those who then actually step up and vote and run for elected office. All of that is a critical component. But it is much more than the political dimension. That's not the only place that civic engagement happens. Often people do hear civic engagement as the political forum, and it is also volunteering, whether that be formal settings like welcoming people at the Senior Center today or helping in the office of some of these fine organizations or what you're doing today as board members and active participants in SSV, but it's also just giving back to the community by helping one another, helping a neighbor down the street who needs help, you know, taking their garbage out because they've been a little sick this week. You know, that all that type of civic service is very much what we're talking about. And so why is that important? Some of it I've already touched on, but, you know, going back to Tocqueville, and I bet you everybody in the room here has read that, maybe not for 50, 60, 70 years, but we all read it once, right? But it really is very interesting. It's a reason that we keep referring back to that, that this person came and identified that one of the most prominent parts that made America stand out, and it was growing by leaps and bounds when he was here in the early middle part of the 19th century, was this sense of collective service that we have here in America. You know, we bind together and do things. I'm trying not to get too tangential, but I remember a woman from Iran that was very active here at the Senior Center, and she was going back to her home country because her daughter who was here was no longer here. And she wanted to create something called a senior center back home. But so she talked about how we got this going. And I talked about the University League, the Junior League of Charlottesville, grassroots group, seeing this need and making it happen. She couldn't identify a similar organization back in Iran that she could latch on to that did that kind of thing other than the mosque. But there was no civic organization outside the faith community that she could latch on to help create such a thing. And it was really eye-opening to me, since I remember that story, it was 5-10 years ago, about one of the things that does make America great. We need that local democracy, that collective spirit in order to be a great community and a great country. The whole community benefits, we talked about that, but we really, you know, the individual benefits too. I think Marta or somebody else talked about the need for purpose. Certainly Rebecca talked about it as health. It's emotional well-being as well as physical, intellectual. We need that through paid or volunteer work. And we need in our country and our community today, we live in a great community, but I think we all agree that we have some challenges in our community today. You heard about some of them, and there's a lot more behind us. We need the wisdom and experience of our elders, and I use that term in a positive way, you know, the wisdom and experience of our elders to help with the different issues that our community faces today. And I know a lot of you are involved, but we need more of our older adults to be able to be at the table, participating in civic activities to help us solve the problems of our community. And as a few people have addressed, again, it is good for our health. The studies, you know, usually you can pull data and studies to argue 10 different sides of a coin. But if you look at any study about how civic involvement and volunteering and what impact it has on us at any age, particularly as we age, 100% of those studies are off the charts of how critical it is for our well-being. It helps make sure we get up and out of the house. The first person I met here when I started working in 1999, working at the welcome desk, 9 o'clock that Monday morning, 8:30, Jean Ward, I can remember, she said, "This is the reason I get out of the house every day." Volunteering at the center, and that got her involved in her faith community, others after her husband had passed away, and she was ready to give up. It was getting back and giving back that gave her a purpose that then allowed her to be there for me, for our center, for her kids, her grandkids, her neighbors, and everyone else. I mean, that's beneficial not just to her, but it's got an incredible ripple impact. So the World Health Organization, that's their logo up in the right, that is the organization, again, that created this concept of an age-friendly community. It's very metrics and research-based. It's not just this pie-in-the-sky cloud concept. There's metrics that back up all of these different things we've talked about and everything we're not touching on today. But this is one of the checklist areas in civic engagement and employment that the World Health Organization and ARP look to. So one is flexible options. I was in the barbershop the other day, my friend's the Staples Barbershop, even without Mr. Staples, one of my favorite places to go. And one of the things I love about that place is their barbers are able to phase into retirement sometimes over 20 years. They don't no longer work 60 hours a week, they cut back to 40. And then they work 30 hours, then they don't work at all any regular, but they fill in whenever's needed. So they, you know, they really provide that types of flexibility, but not everybody does that. More employers need to be able to create flexible opportunities. Paid and volunteer work opportunities, you know, it's not one or the other. Promoting the qualities of older adults, there's a lot of ageism in workforce. Hopefully none of you experience it, but that's an area that we will be looking at. Training opportunities, it's a big issue in our community. People in workforce have identified there's a growing number of older adults that need retraining, and there is no specific programs in our area to focus on the needs of older adults. And then facilitating membership and decision-making bodies in all sectors, public, private, and nonprofit. So this is part of what CAA is going to be doing, encouraging older citizens to express their individual and collective desire, inspiring participation in what you all do, promoting the respect for the knowledge and the skills acquired through experience, and making sure that there's civic opportunities, volunteering and otherwise, for all of our citizens. We talked a lot about equity already today. And so one of the things that we'll talk about some if you have questions today, and certainly beyond today, is, you know, what does this mean? Hopefully it's interesting to you as a citizen, but to you as a member, a senior statesman of Virginia, for those of you who are members here today, you know, what we hope is that SSV looks to join as a partner. And I'll tell you in a second just what that speaks to out of our charter. But because SSV represents lifelong learning and civic participation, two key components of a age-friendly community, looking to give an opportunity for SSV to amplify its voice beyond just this room on a regular basis and the podcast, as another way to enhance the quality of life for all residents and as a way to contribute to the economic well-being of our community. And so what is a partner at CAA? Organizations are individuals who provide leadership and development for an age-friendly community through education, advocacy, engagement, planning, and evaluation, and who actively participate in alliance meetings and work groups. That's what we mean by a partner. It's pretty straightforward. Steering committee is 13 members. Marta mentioned we're up over 25, I believe, full partners. And the work groups are those five areas, the advocacy, engagement, planning, and evaluation. We would look for members of Senior Statesman Virginia to be involved in some of those work groups, which is where the work is getting done. So that's a snapshot of what the Charlotte Valley Alliance partnership is as well, and then I'll give it back to Rich and see what questions you all have.
And as I said before, we'll do Q&A with microphones, and there'll be a microphone on each side. But let me start right at the very beginning, Peter. You've invited us, and Rebecca also mentioned it, and Marta did as well, to be a partner. Do you see it costing the senior statesman financially, or what are the commitments that you're expecting besides providing leadership and development? Talk about the cost.
So there are no dues or fees or anything for partnership at this time. We don't have any paid staff, so we don't really have any hard costs. So at this juncture, we're not looking for any dues or fees. The steering committee members, the full-time partners, including John, Jabba, us, and a few others at the table and others, are giving gifts in kind. We're giving staff support. The Alliance logo was created by Marta and Brad and I and a few other marketing folks, for example. Other people are helping create gifts in kind to support it, but we're not looking for partners to make a capital investment at this point.
Super. Thank you. Questions on anything that was discussed today? Or comments or surprises?
None of you referenced the importance that we're in a university community and the university is such a major player in all the things you discussed, employment, housing, transportation, quality of life. So I just wondered if you might comment on that.
I can go first. I think with us at Jaunt, they actually do work with us, but they work on a more broad scale of from an employment standpoint or even from that healthcare standpoint. So it's not isolated or segregated by age groups or even socioeconomic information. So they do help, but I think it's like the senior statesman. It's a question of, in your mind, well, how can I help or how can I be part of it or helpful? And it really comes down to the university has a lot of information, a lot of knowledge, and it's somehow trying to figure out how to tease that out of them without them feeling that they're exposing that information too much. It's kind of an ambiguous answer, I guess, but they do help Jaunt a lot with trying to understand how we can better serve. It's just it's a matter of how far are they willing to go sometimes. And it goes back to that comment I made about celebrating successes. The more they see the results of helping us, the more they've been willing to help more. And so that's been a pretty positive return relationship we've had in the last year.
Happy. I think, too, that when Matt Thornhill was here a couple of years ago for the Big Think, he talked a lot about many of the things that appeal to millennials also appeal to seniors. And so in that sense, I think a lot of the advantages of the university are driving things that would also make for a better life for everybody. So the age-friendly works both ways. That some of the things that we want in terms of transportation that keeps us accessible or housing that keeps us in a place where we can get to services is a lot of what millennials want. They don't necessarily want home ownership. They don't necessarily want to be dependent on a car. And so there's a lot of synergy between developing a community that meets all those needs. So in that sense, the university being here probably helps facilitate thinking in some ways that helps seniors, but it isn't necessarily the main point that they're thinking about.
And let me also, just from the Charlotte Valley Alliance's standpoint, the University of Virginia Health System, as well as Sentara, Martha, Jeff, are partners, and they're very active partners. We're very pleased with how much time and energy they're putting into this, particularly in some of the first steps of how we're going to assess how our community is doing from an age-friendly standpoint. We have been talking to a few folks at Central Grounds, the greater university outside of the health system, how they might be able to have a role as well. We haven't found the right representative from the university to also get involved to be able to see how the architecture school and whatnot and urban planning can play a role, Batten School and policy issues, nursing school, I mean, Darden and Comm School and business opportunities of an age-friendly community. You know, I challenge anybody to think of any aspect of the university that does not impact and present resources for us to be thoughtful of. So that is very much on our mind. CAA started founding, I don't know if we ever even decided where, it kind of started very informally. and we just, I guess, about a year and a half ago created a charter and actually started having officers and whatnot. So we're really only our second full year of kind of functioning, fully functioning. And so the university is one of our high priorities to get more involved. If anybody has an idea of who might be a friendly ear to this at the university as high up as possible, so we can get somebody up at the president's office or something, we're all ears about getting them at the table.
I've lived
here. So we'll do one.
I've lived here since 1970, and I'm almost embarrassed to admit this. I see jaunt trucks all over town. I have no idea what you do. I think it is that you're a taxi service for seniors, but could you enlighten me?
You know, that's actually the common problem with jaunt is it's so beloved, but yet so many people are confused about what we do. I had the vice mayor, Heather Hill, came by yesterday, and we were talking, and she left very confused because we are very complex in what we do because we do a variety of things. It changes from the urban to the rural area. So there's no simple answer. It comes down to where you're trying to go and where you live. A lot of people who live in the urban area, it's under an umbrella of Americans with Disability Act where it's a tandem service to CAT. And most every metropolitan area has that type of service. It's called paratransit. And if you're unable to access CAT or unable to drive yourself, you qualify to be able to ride. So that happens in the urban area. But then as you get into the rural areas, we start expanding what we do. It's in tandem with JABA, things like that. So it varies. We do some contractual relationships with agencies, Medicaid-related things, so it's a variety of things. So not so much a taxi, but it is fairly demand-based, demand-response-based. Typically, people have to call a day ahead of time, whether you live in the rural area or the urban area. So we run around. We don't run around any kind of fixed route. It's all based on the schedules that we create that day. I think people are surprised to find out that we have about 90 vehicles. We operate on about an $8 million budget and about 124 employees. So we're fairly large. That's why everybody sees us all the time, because at any given time, there are 62 vehicles on the road at any given time. But so it really does vary. But without a doubt, what you're mentioning is one of our number one challenges. And as we're moving forward, we're trying to figure out how to best communicate what we can offer. As I was saying earlier when I was up at the podium, getting that information out the correct way to people who eventually need to access it is one of our biggest challenges. Is until you actually have an absolute need to use jaunt, you tend to not know exactly what we can do. And that's not a great thing, because then you're being reactive and not proactive.
Brad, could you talk about the level of fares? Is it the level that a cab would be or a level that a bus would be?
Within the urban area, it's $1.50, which is federally mandated to be a maximum of the double of what CAT provides. So that's what that's set at. Outside of that, it becomes more based on what we think is reasonable. We try to be sensitive to those who need to use us versus those who might want to use us. And it varies based on the locality. They tend to have a little bit of input on that. But sometimes it's interesting. We run a service all the way from Buckingham County up to Charlottesville. And that service is paid for. About 40% of that comes from people paying their own way versus in other places that we run, maybe it's 10%. So sometimes the fares, that thing to where people are willing to pay more to be able to not have to deal with driving on 20, which is an interesting dynamic. So.
Question over there.
Give me a little better sense of what these five standing work groups are doing. What are their goals and where are they in meeting their goals?
With the assessment one, are you willing to do that?
Sure. I'm happy to start with the assessment work group. So the assessment work group, which I'm a part of, is looking at, oddly enough, data collection and trying to establish, let me back up, because there is a survey that is a part of a requirement for our process to become an age-friendly community. And so we've looked at that in a couple of different ways. One, we would like to have focus groups with adults over 50 to hear about their needs and concerns in the community. But then also with the health department, that we have a survey model called a community assessment for preparedness and emergency response, a CASPER. And we're looking at using that as a model to assess in Charlottesville and the surrounding counties, our district, which is a door-to-door survey. And again, it's at that point where when you're talking about a healthy community for older adults, you're also talking about just a healthy community in general. So that survey will be much more, it'll be statistically sound and based on a sample. So we've been very active. We've got a draft survey in place and are excited for next steps. Would you like?
We also have a planning work group that is focused on figuring out how to translate some of the key aspects of an age-friendly community into the planning efforts of the different localities, whether it's their comp plan or something as very specific as even right here at Hillsdale and Greenbrier, trying to, if you could go back in time and get ahead of that maybe 2 years, trying to figure out how to best be part of that effort to make sure that those key aspects of age-friendly are incorporated into those planning processes. So that's one of our work groups that we have.
And two of the other work groups, the education and public relations work group, today is a good example of that, where we approached Senior Statesmen of Virginia and asked if we could share the information. So getting education out so people know about the Alliance. And we're really happy that at the Hometown Summit in April, there'll be a program on ageism and public policy, so we were able to promote that involvement. So we're always looking for ways. Last May, May is Older Americans Month, so if you can remember back 9 months ago, in the Daily Progress every Friday, there was an article that featured one of the aspects of the elements for age-friendly community, and we announced the formation of the Alliance back then. So those kinds of things are being done. Sue isn't here today. She heads up the advocacy, and that's pretty much what it says. We're trying to figure out what is our policy around where do we advocate, but for instance, the city of Charlottesville has a bike pedestrian group, and so when they needed some help with that, they contacted us, and then we were able to put them in touch with people who would help talking more about pedestrian needs. So Sue's also been going out to the other jurisdictions to see to what degree they would like to be involved, and then we have one more.
Yeah, another example of the advocacy and PR. One of the things we're trying to do, that, and actually it's the civic engagement piece too, is trying to make sure age-friendly issues are at the table. And we're doing all these small area plans now. There's been a lot in the press again about the RIO 29 small area plan, as well as the hydraulic. And Marta and I have been involved in those. Our Albemarle County staff person, Emily Kilroy, made sure that we had some representation at those to make sure age-friendly issues were literally at the table from the very get-go to make sure that those are being considered. And then we have an engagement group which right now focuses on continuing to build a partnership. Ray Mishler from Sentara, Martha Jeff, and I, and then some others help fill in, also go out to the community and continue to talk to people either proactively, like we did with Senior Statesmen of Virginia, or reactively when, again, the Charlottesville Area Association of Realtors heard about us and wanted to be involved. You know, we continue to follow up with that to share what role they may have to encourage a wider participation in the Alliance. I mean, we don't have a cap in mind, but I could imagine hundreds of partners in the Alliance in the future. So I think that answers pretty much all of the work group work. So they're all active, and they all have room for help from more from new friends.
And you talked about the 29 RIO small group development. We had a program on that about a year ago, and one of the things that surprised the county was how many of our members wanted to make sure there were bike paths, because they want to be able to walk and bike to the various communities. We have a question in the front. There's a microphone right there.
I think Peter pretty much addressed it. I was going to ask about some specifics about your involvement in something like the RIO 29 redevelopment situation, but
Yes to bikes. I can flesh that out a little bit more. Because I sat on the RIO or sit on the RIO 29 small area plan because they invited CAA. I'm the chair of CAA last year and this year, and representing the senior center, we're very interested in that project because it impacts our current property and our moving up to Belvedere. For example, if you followed that, they're looking at the four different quadrants of that intersection, and there was a lot of talk about walkability, bikeability, and particularly the stretch in the Berkmar portion, which I guess is the south, I always have to think of a compass, southwest portion of that intersection is actually pretty hilly. And they were just talking about how, you know, pedestrian friendly it is. And I said, well, maybe. But if you're on a walker or if you're, you know, pushing a double wide stroller with your two kids in it, up that hill, it's not as pedestrian friendly as you may think it is. And I remember pointing that out, and everybody really did kind of stop. I was like, oh yeah, because most of the people there were able-bodied 30, 40, 50-year-olds who that hill was not an issue. And of course, as we all know too, most people actually never walked that hill. They've driven it, and it doesn't feel like much of a hill in a car. So, I mean, that's a very specific example at that intersection of just raising awareness of how that needs to be thought of for a wider population that often does not get thought of.
All right, question up front.
I think I have a question for Sunshine about affordable housing. The city council, which was to tilt at windmills, is now going to mandate or seems to want to mandate affordable housing as part of new developments. The city doesn't have any land. The county has land, and it would seem like affordable housing needs to go somewhere in the county. But I wonder what your experience is in Austin or what you've seen here so far is what is likely to be successful in affordable housing?
It's a complicated question with multiple layers, as they always are. So the what I believe you're referring to in terms of what the city is tackling right now is the idea of equivalent sort of a density bonus program, where essentially by incentivizing developers to give them either extra height to build on or extra density or something along those lines, they would provide a community benefit, and that community benefit theoretically is affordable housing. So that's a mechanism that is used throughout every place in the country, honestly. Let me step back for a second. So one thing, just to be clear, there are two flavors of that. One is by incentive, so that you can offer a carrot, and that carrot can be small or can be big, depending on how committed the municipality is or the state is to getting affordable housing built. There is a point at which, you know, if the carrot's not big enough, a developer is not going to do that extra density or extra height because it's not worth it to them. So it has to be a big enough carrot. The other flavor is what's called inclusionary zoning, which is when you require it, which is actually not allowed in Charlottesville, and it's not allowed in most of the state of Virginia. It is allowed in Arlington, and actually Albemarle County has a provision for that as well. They have never used it. That's my understanding. So the city council is not actually considering a requirement because they can't. They're not legally allowed to. They are considering the carrot portion, and my personal take is that, and this is consistent with kind of housing policy throughout every region of the country, is all kinds of housing for all kinds of people in all kinds of places. Meaning that yes, that we need to do affordable housing in those places where cost of land is lower, and we can get more units there because we can get more bang for a buck in that regard. But then you start to introduce potentially transportation issues and integration issues that I was referring to earlier. But fundamentally, people want choice. Marta actually referenced it in her kind of opening, is that she gets to choose where she lives. And so people want to choose what schools their kids go to and where which family members they want to be near and where their workplace is. And folks at the lower end of the income spectrum often don't have choice. So my personal take is that we need to be providing affordable housing. You know, we need to have large chunks of it to address the crisis, but we also need to have it kind of laced throughout the community. And one way of doing that is having it built into small bits here and there through every development that gets developed in the city and the counties.
Good afternoon. So I'm actually one of Charlottesville's newest seniors. I'm just transitioning. My home is... I have a home up in Northern Virginia, and we're moving here. But one of the things I noticed in looking for housing related to aging-friendly housing. I know we talked about affordable housing, but I actually work in the aging field, and one of the things I notice is that there's very hilly communities here, and trying to move around as an older person presents its challenges. I was curious if the if there's any of the builders are on board as partners in this in these initiatives.
We don't today, but they are on our list. The Home Builders Association, for example, is high on our list to engage this year. We do know there's quite a few home builders that have a lot of interest in what you're talking about. One of the, and I'm no expert in home building, so help me, but my understanding, and I certainly know that some of this is very true, is a lot of smaller home builders have gone out of business in the last 10 years as the housing crisis hit, and some big international home builders came into the community. That combination of things made it very hard for a lot of the smaller custom home builders that can be more attentive to that. But at the same time, some of the housing, particularly up at Dunlora Forest, for example, and I think some of Dunlora Ridge and others are certainly trying to address that. So we know it's certainly a big issue, and we're going to be engaging them, home builders more. You know, private developers, and not just home builders, but private developers, you know, the Great Easterns of the world and those folks obviously have a big impact on our community, for better and for worse. And so having them at the table will certainly be a big part of what we're looking at as well. The Chamber of Commerce, we expect to join. I don't know if they actually have, did they ever formally? The Chamber of Commerce has been invited, yeah. And I believe will join at some juncture. But if you read the paper, they're going through a bit of a leadership transition. They've got a home builder group within that as well that we hope to be at the table. But I don't know if Mart or someone else.
The only other thing I was going to add, and I don't mean to put Billy Campbell on the spot, but I know when we were wrapping up the assessment of where we'd gotten to in the 2020 plan, one of the last pieces that came out of that was working with builders on some checklists. And I don't know if you can take a minute to talk about that. Didn't go anywhere. Okay.
For those who are listening at home, she's nodding her head.
I knew that's what we were kind of trying to get toward, but nothing. Okay.
Well, your board of directors of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia recommends that we become the 26th partner organization to be part of the Charlottesville Area Alliance, joining OLLI, JAVA, Senior Center, and all the folks up here and many other organizations. This partnership does not include any financial support, but gives us a seat at the table in advocating for an age-friendly community, which the board sees as part of our mission. By a show of hands, I'm going to ask the Senior Statesmen of Virginia members, and it's easy to join at the back. We've got applications. But I'm going to ask the Senior Statesmen of Virginia to vote in favor or against becoming a partner with, and then we can choose what issues we get involved with, how much we participate, which working group we join or don't join. And we're hoping that the participation will not only be folks from the board, but we're hoping primarily will come from the Senior Statesmen of Virginia members. So if you're a Senior Statesman of Virginia member, how many folks, by a show of hands, are interested in joining as a partner to the Charlottesville Area Alliance?
Right. I'm a member. I get to
okay. Get a quick count. 4, 7, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22, 24, 26. How many folks, 27, how many folks are opposed? It passes unanimously. So we'll join you as the newest member of the Charlottesville Alliance.
Thank you.